Chapter 77. I entreated you not to come tonight.
Oh, my Giovanni.
And you promised.
Oh. Why did you come, Giovanni?
It was her sister's voice. It broke on a heartrending sob. And the voice of the resourceful capitalist cargaters, master and slave of the Santome treasure, who had been caught unawares by old Giorgio while stealing across the open towards the ravine to get some more silver, answered careless and cool, but sounding startlingly weak from the ground. It seemed as though I could not live through the night without seeing thee once more, my star, my little flower. The brilliant tertulia was just over, the last guests had departed, and the senior administrator had gone to his room already, when Dr. Monaghan, who had been expected in the evening, but had not turned up, arrived driving along the woodblock pavement under the electric lamps of the deserted Calle de la Constitution, and found the great gateway of the casa still open. He limped in, stumped up the stairs, and found the fat and sleek Basilio on the point of turning off the lights in the sala. The prosperous majordomo remained open-mouthed at this late invasion. "Don't put out the lights," commanded the doctor. "Want to see the Senora." "The Senora's in the senior administrator's cancellaria," said Basilio, in an unctuous voice. "The senior administrator starts for the mountain in an hour. There is some trouble with the workmen to be feared, it appears. A shameless people without reason and decency. And idle, senior. Idle. You are shamelessly lazy and imbecile yourself," said the doctor, with that faculty for exasperation which made him so generally beloved. "Don't put the lights out." Basilio retired with dignity. Dr. Monaghan, waiting in the brilliantly lighted sala, heard presently a door close at the further end of the house. A jingle of spurs died out. The senior administrator was off to the mountain. With a measured swish of her long train, flashing with jewels and the shimmer of silk, her delicate head bowed, as if under the weight of a mass of fair hair, in which the silver threads were lost, the erst lady of Sulaco, as Captain Mitchell used to describe her, moved along the lighted corridor, wealthy beyond great dreams of wealth, considered, loved, respected, honored, and as solitary as any human being had ever been, perhaps, on this earth. The doctor's Mrs. Gould, 1 minute, stopped her with a start at the door of the lighted and empty sala. From the similarity of mood and circumstance, the sight of the doctor, standing there all alone amongst the groups of furniture, recalled to her emotional memory her unexpected meeting with Martin Decad. She seemed to hear in the silence the voice of that man, dead miserably so many years ago, pronounce the words, "Antonia left her fan here." But it was the doctor's voice that spoke, a little altered by his excitement. She remarked his shining eyes. "Mrs. Gould, you are wanted. Do you know what has happened? You remember what I told you yesterday about Nostromo? Well, it seems that a lancha, a decked boat, coming from Zapiga, with 4 Negroes in her, passing close to the Great Isabel, was hailed from the cliff by a woman's voice, Linda's, as a matter of fact commanding them, it's a moonlight night, to go round to the beach, and take up a wounded man to the town. The patron, from whom I've heard all this, of course, did so at once. He told me that, when they got round to the low side of the Great Isabel, they found Linda Viola waiting for them. They followed her. She led them under a tree not far from the cottage. There they found Nostromo lying on the ground with his head in the younger girl's lap, and Father Viola standing some distance off leaning on his gun. Under Linda's direction they got a table out of the cottage for a stretcher, after breaking off the legs. They are here, Mrs. Gould. I mean Nostromo and Angusel. The Negroes brought him into the first aid hospital near the harbor. He made the attendant send for me. But it was not me he wanted to see, it was you, Mrs. Gould. It was you."
"Me?"
whispered Mrs. Gould, shrinking a little. "Yes, you," the doctor burst out. "He begged me, his enemy, as he thinks, to bring you to him at once. It seems he has something to say to you alone." "Impossible," murmured Mrs. Gould.
He said to me, remind her that I have done something to keep a roof over her head. Apostrophe. Dot dot Mrs. Gould, the doctor pursued, in the greatest excitement. Oh, you remember the silver? The silver in the lighter that was lost? Mrs. Gould remembered. But she did not say she hated the mere mention of that silver. Frankness personified, she remembered with an exaggerated horror that for the first and last time of her life as he had concealed the truth from her husband about that very silver. As he had been corrupted by her fears at that time, and as he had never forgiven herself. Moreover, that silver, which would never have come down, if her husband had been made acquainted with the news brought by Deckard, had been in a roundabout way nearly the cause of Dr. Monaghan's death. And these things appeared to her very dreadful. Was it lost, though, the doctor exclaimed? I've always felt that there was a mystery about our Nostromo ever since. I do believe he wants now, at the point of death, the point of death? Repeated Mrs. Gould. Yes. Yes. Dot dot he wants, perhaps, to tell you something concerning that silver which, oh, no, no, exclaimed Mrs. Gould, in a low voice. Isn't it lost and done with? Isn't there enough treasure without it to make everybody in the world miserable? The doctor remained still, in a submissive, disappointed silence. At last he ventured, very low, and there is that Viola girl, Giselle. What are we to do? It looks as though father and sister had, Mrs. Gould admitted, that she felt in duty bound to do her best for these girls. I have a volunteer, the doctor said. If you don't mind getting into it, he waited, all impatience, till Mrs. Gould reappeared, having thrown over her dress a gray cloak with a deep hood. It was thus that, cloaked and monastically hooded over her evening costume, this woman, full of endurance and compassion, stood by the side of the bed on which the splendid Capitis de Cargadors lay stretched out motionless on his back. The whiteness of sheets and pillows gave a somber and energetic relief to his bronzed face, to the dark, nervous hands, so good on a tiller, upon a bridle, and on a trigger, lying open and idle upon a white coverlet. She is innocent, the Capitis was saying in a deep and level voice, as though afraid that a louder word would break the slender hold his spirit still kept upon his body. As she is innocent, it is I alone. But no matter. For these things I would answer to no man or woman alive. He paused. Mrs. Gould's face, very white within the shadow of the hood, bent over him with an invincible and dreary sadness. And the low sobs of Giselle Viola, kneeling at the end of the bed, her gold hair with coppery gleams loose and scattered over the Capitis's feet, hardly troubled the silence of the room. Ha! Old Giorgio, the guardian of thine honor! Fancy the Vecchio coming upon me so light of foot, so steady of aim! I myself could have done no better. But the price of a charge of powder might have been saved. The honor was safe. Dot dot Sonora, she would have followed to the end of the world Nostromo the thief. Dot 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 I have said the word. The spell is broken. A low moan from the girl made him cast his eyes down. I cannot see her. Dot 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 no matter, he went on, with the shadow of the old magnificent carelessness in his voice. Oh, one kiss is enough, if there is no time for more. An airy soul, Sonora. Bright and warm, like sunshine soon clouded, and soon serene. They would crush it there between them. Sonora, cast on her the eye of your compassion, as famed from one end of the land to the other as the courage and daring of the man who speaks to you. She will console herself in time. And even Ramirez is not a bad fellow. I am not angry. No, it is not Ramirez who overcame the Capitis of the Sulaco Cargadors. He paused, made an effort, and in louder voice, a little wildly, declared, I die betrayed by, but he did not say by whom, or by what he was dying betrayed. She would not have betrayed me, he began again, opening his eyes very wide. As she was faithful, we were going very far very soon. I could have torn myself away from that accursed treasure for her. For that child I would have left boxes and boxes of it full. and Deckard took four ingots. Why? Picardia. To betray me? How could I give back the treasure with four ingots missing? They would have said I had purloined them. The doctor would have said that. Alas. It holds me yet. Mrs. Gould bent low, fascinated cold with apprehension. What became of Don Martin on that night, Nostromo? Who knows? I wondered what would become of me. Now I know. Death was to come upon me unawares. He went away. He betrayed me. And you think I have killed him? You are all alike, you fine people. The silver has killed me. It has held me. It holds me yet. Nobody knows where it is. But you are the wife of Don Carlos, who put it into my hands and said, save it on your life. ... And when I returned, and you all thought it was lost, what do I hear? It was nothing of importance. Let it go. Up, Nostromo, the faithful, and ride away to save us, for dear life. ... Nostromo. Mrs. Gould whispered, bending very low. I, too, have hated the idea of that silver from the bottom of my heart. Marvelous. That one of you should hate the wealth that you know so well how to take from the hands of the poor. The world rests upon the poor, as old Giorgio says. You have been always good to the poor. But there is something accursed in wealth. Senora, shall I tell you where the treasure is? To you alone. Shining. Incorruptible. A pained, involuntary reluctance lingered in his tone, in his eyes, plain to the woman with the genius of sympathetic intuition. She averted her glance from the miserable subjection of the dying man, appalled, wishing to hear no more of the silver. No, Capitus, she said. And no one misses it now. Let it be lost forever. After hearing these words, Nostromo closed his eyes, uttered no word, made no movement. Outside the door of the sick room, Dr. Monaghan, excited to the highest pitch, his eyes shining with eagerness, came up to the two women. Now, Mrs. Gould, he said, almost brutally in his impatience, tell me, was I right? There is a mystery. You have got the word of it, have you not? He told me nothing, said Mrs. Gould, steadily. The light of his temperamental enmity to Nostromo went out of Dr. Monaghan's eyes. He stepped back submissively. He did not believe Mrs. Gould. But her word was law. He accepted her denial like an inexplicable fatality affirming the victory of Nostromo's genius over his own. Even before that woman, whom he loved with secret devotion, he had been defeated by the magnificent Capitus de Cargadores, the man who had lived his own life on the assumption of unbroken fidelity, rectitude, and courage. Pray send at once somebody for my carriage, spoke Mrs. Gould from within her hood. Then, turning to Giselle Viola, come nearer me, child, come closer. We will wait here. Giselle Viola, heartbroken and childlike, her face veiled in her falling hair, crept up to her side. Mrs. Gould slipped her hand through the arm of the unworthy daughter of old Viola, the immaculate republican, the hero without a stain. Slowly, gradually, as a withered flower droops, the head of the girl, who would have followed a thief to the end of the world, rested on the shoulder of Dona Emilia, the first lady of Sulaco, the wife of the senior administrator of the San Tome mine. And Mrs. Gould, feeling her suppressed sobbing, nervous and excited, at the first and only moment of bitterness in her life. It was worthy of Dr. Monaghan himself. Console yourself, child. Very soon he would have forgotten you for his treasure. Senora, he loved me. He loved me, Giselle whispered, despairingly. He loved me as no one had ever been loved before. I have been loved too, Mrs. Gould said in a severe tone. Giselle clung to her convulsively. Oh, Senora, but you shall live adored to the end of your life, she sobbed out. Mrs. Gould kept an unbroken silence till the carriage arrived. She helped in the half-fainting girl. After the doctor had shut the door of the landau, she leaned over to him. You can do nothing, she whispered. No, Mrs. Gould. Moreover, he won't let us touch him. It does not matter. I just had one look. Dot dot useless. Buddy promised to see old Viola and the other girl that very night. He could get the police boat to take him off to the island. He remained in the street, looking after the land rolling away slowly behind the white mules. The rumor of some accident to Captain Fidanza had been spreading along the new quays with their rows of lamps and the dark shapes of towering cranes. A knot of night prowlers, the poorest of the poor, hung about the door of the first aid hospital, whispering in the moonlight of the empty street. There was no one with the wounded man, but the pale photographer, small, frail, bloodthirsty, the hater of capitalists, perched on the high stool near the head of the bed with his knees up and his chin in his hands. He had been fetched by a comrade who, working late on the wharf, had heard from a Negro belonging to a lancha that Captain Fidanza had been brought ashore mortally wounded. "Have you any dispositions to make, comrade?" he asked anxiously. "Do not forget that we want money for our work. The rich must be fought with their own weapons." Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.